I'm Mark Goodyear, inviting you backstage and behind the screens to celebrate the glitz, the glamour, and the fame of the biggest soundtracks from the movies and theatre. For the next hour, we'll be playing some of the best-loved musical moments from Les Miserables, Evita, Grease, Four Weddings and a Funeral, Bridget Jones's Diary, and Mamma Mia. From soaring ballads and heartbreaking solos to inspiring duets and storming showstoppers, we'll be investigating why these songs capture our imaginations and have stood the test of time. So, as the reissues of these classic soundtracks hit the shelves, we celebrate their magic with the stars of the screen and stage. You'll be hearing from original cast members like Michael Ball.
The point of a musical, why a musical works and why people still keep going to them and still love them, is that you can heighten emotions far more with music. You say more with a chord of music than you do with 100 words.
Bridget Jones, singer and songwriter, Gabrielle.
This was, to me, one of the greatest chick flicks there was, and it's up there with the best of them. And for me, you know, Out of Reach was a song that kind of people love, and I love it too.
Grease fan Sophie Ellis-Bextor.
The movie Grease is in my top three films, I think, certainly from when I was little. My cats, in fact, are called Kanicki and Rizzo. I think every girl, when you're watching when you're little, you're like, maybe I've got that in me that I could just transform into this vamp. And then Danny's like, yeah, I will definitely get out with her.
West End star Beverly Knight. Mustang
Sally. For a song that really kind of hits home and gets you a hit, I don't think there is a real formula. It's just when the creative process and the fairy dust, you know, kind of end up being mixed together and something very special happens.
And the man behind some of the biggest musical soundtracks of the last 40 years, Sir Tim Rice.
I think with any hit record, there are so many elements that have to be right. Obviously the artist, obviously the tune, the words have to be, by and large, something that people can identify with and at least make sense. But I think if it was easily done as a formula, then everybody would do it with every record. But for every hit one's lucky enough to get, you have a lot of flops. Any dream will
do. Plus, Ella Henderson, Marty Pello, Rebecca Ferguson, and Melanie C. Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice's rock opera Jesus Christ Superstar was the beginning of a new generation of musicals that has wowed audiences for over 40 years. But despite its well-known songs, it hasn't always been a success on the stage, as Tim Rice explains. Every time I look at you, I
don't understand. In America, Superstar is perceived, really, as being a record rather than a show. And the album came out in America at the end of 1970 and was a massive hit. And the show, when the show came to Broadway, the show wasn't really quite as successful as the album had been. In fact, it wasn't really a mega hit. It just about got its money back, but it ran for about 18 months, which is not great. It was really fell between two stools on Broadway. The conventional Broadway audience of the time thought it was too loud, and you didn't do rock and roll or rock in Broadway in those days. It didn't quite work at that time in the theatre.
Since its first run on Broadway, Jesus Christ Superstar has seen a number of revivals, recently starring ex-Spice Girl Melanie C. I don't know how to love him, what to do,
how to move him. I've been. I think Andrew Lloyd Webber's collaborations with Tim Rice have been his most successful, and I've been lucky enough to play Mary Magdalene in Jesus Christ Superstar. And there was something about that time when they worked together which was so magical,
And, you know, the marriage of music and lyrics just really worked. It was strong. The storytelling was simple, but very effective.
One of the hottest leads in the West End, Cillian Donnelly, has been mesmerised by the magic of Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice's writing partnership from an early age.
Jesus Christ Superstar was one of the first albums I ever listened to. And even, I'm 6 years old, but still, the like, bam, 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 epic, epic music hitting. And then Tim Rice with the lyrics, everyone can sing them. And I think that's the genius of Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice. They've always written songs that fuel the narrative, that really push the show. I think they just absolutely created a new genre of musical theatre. And even Schoenberg and Boublil, when they wrote Les Miserables, they said it was based on having seen JCS, that they go, oh, here's a new way of writing musicals, and then they jumped on their piano and then they create the most incredible musical ever.
Red, the blood of angry men. Black, the dark of ages past. Red, a world about to dawn. Black, a night that ends at last.
From the first rehearsals back in 1985, the original cast of Les Miserables knew they were onto something big, but Michael Ball, who starred as student revolutionary Marius, had no idea just how big it would become.
Had you been there tonight, you might also have known how your world may be changed in just one burst of light, and what was right.
It was an extraordinary time doing Les Mis. We spent 11 weeks rehearsing it, and we felt we had something special.
I feel my soul on fire.
Black,
my world if she's not there.
Red,
the colour of desire.
Black,
the colour of despair.
First of all, we had terrible reviews. Pretty well across the board, really bad reviews. But the audience reaction, I've never seen anything like it. And it's why it's the most appropriate musical to call the People's Musical, because it was word of mouth that made us sold out from the very start. There was this huge groundswell of people. Cameron is thinking, well, this is Cameron McIntosh, well, we'll have our 11-week run at the Barbican and that'll be it. We won't transfer to the West End. And about 4 weeks into the run, when you could not get a ticket and there was a pandemonium, he said, we'll brave it, we'll confirm the West End. And here we are 30 years later and it's still running.
Do you hear the people sing, singing the song of angry men? It is the music of the people who will not be slaves again. When the beating of your heart echoes the beating of the drums, there is a life about to start and tomorrow comes.
Songs from Les Mis, which ran for nearly 3 hours on stage, stayed with the audiences long after they'd left the theatre. More than 70 million people have watched the world's longest-running musical. But it wasn't until an unassuming audition in 2009 that a pop hit was created.
I dreamed a dream in time gone by, when hope was high and life worth living. I dreamed that love would never die. I prayed that God would be forgiving.
I'll never forget that moment Susan Boyle came on and did Britain's Got Talent, because I, like everyone else, felt ashamed of myself. When she walked in and we were all having a little bit of a snigger, and because the song is so close to me, I Dreamed a Dream is so close, I remember Patti LuPone performing it for the first time. And I went, she's not going to sing I Dreamed a Dream, is she? And then she started, and do you know, as we're talking about it, I've got goosebumps. And I remember my reaction. I sat there, I cried my eyes out.
But the tigers come at night.
For her, because it was so magnificent, and she was singing from her heart. And at myself, because I was ashamed of myself for making assumptions And I think that's how everybody felt. It was unbelievably moving. And the terrific thing is that it then brings that song and the whole of Les Mis back into the frame again, and everyone was talking about it. Cillian Donnelly, who also performed in the West End production, joined the cast for the 2013 film adaptation, starring Hugh Jackman, Eddie Redmayne and Anne Hathaway, who broke hearts all over the world with her performance of the songs. And there are storms we
cannot weather. The cameramen then and there were going, she's going to be nominated and definitely win an Oscar for that performance. And we're like, really? She goes, we were all in tears. She did it in something like, I think, one or two or three takes or something like this. But she always did it a full take. And they said every take is just a winner because it's the song. And it just supports it. And it's so fragile.
Oh, life has killed the dream. I dream.
Great music can translate from the stage to the screen, but it can work both ways. Simba, Scar and the rest of the Lion King pride burst onto our screens in 1994, and 3 years later, their songs were developed for the theatre. Beverly Knight is such a fan of the production, she's seen it four times.
It never fails to move you. The opening, it's the whole kind of 3D experience of it. Hearing the song, The Circle of Life, that's the first thing you hear. And you're just blown away by it, you know? It's so magical and it's so special because it speaks of a universal truth that we all understand. You're born, you live, you die, and you make way for someone else to come through. From the day we arrive on the planet, and thinking of step into the sun, there's more to see.
Tim Rice wrote the hit songs, along with legendary superstar Elton John.
I think the film could have been a pretty big hit, even if it had an appalling score. But that's because the basic storyline and the characters were very well drawn. But I think the fact that it did have, if I may be very immodest, a score that people liked and worked as a big hit album out of context, then I think that helped the film enormously.
Music for the film was so integral to the story, Tim was drafted in to write the lyrics as the film was being developed.
I mean, I was on board day one when it was just Disney producer, a director, and a couple of drawings on the wall. And it wasn't even called The Lion King, it was called King of the Jungle, which is a bit daft because there's no jungle. then it was called Simba briefly. And eventually it was called The Lion King. So it was, even though one ended up only writing five or six songs, I was very much involved with more than just the songs, which was great. It means no worries.
Writing for a huge blockbuster film can give you a hit, but it doesn't come without its pressures, as Gabrielle remembers when she was asked to write for Bridget Jones's Diary.
I was due to go on holiday. The head of my label, Ferdy Unger Hamilton, actually gave me the book and said, oh, you know, you're going away. How about taking this for a read? It was a fantastic book to read. I fell in love with the characters. And so when I got back, and he's like, I've got a mission for you, you know, the actual thing was, you know, I was approached to get you to write for it. And I was like, wow, immediately I knew who I was going to write about and what I was going to write about. And the rest was history for me. I'm really glad I didn't know beforehand, because I think the pressure would have been on, whereas I totally fell in love with the book, and so everything came pretty easily to me. When you hear your own music coming at you from a movie, it is an incredible feeling, you know, because, you know, you hope that other people like it as much as you do, or, you know, it's not going to get slated, it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea. But I've got to say that when it came up in the movie, I was just like, wow, you know, you're just like, but again, just because it was such a great movie, and this, the association is good enough for me, because it was a thing that people still talk about.
Romantic comedies and hit songs are a marriage made in heaven, often to a floppy-haired Hugh Grant, like in Notting Hill.
It's amazing how you can speak right to my heart. Without saying a word, you can light up the dark.
From the script, putting it into a movie, to unleashing it upon the public, that's when you know it's magic, that it comes together. When the record buying public go crazy and keep songs that, you know, their number one position for weeks and weeks and weeks on end, which is fantastic, by the way. So, yeah, it's fantastic.
The smile on your face lets me know that you need me. There's a truth in your eyes saying you'll never leave me. The touch of your hand says you'll catch me wherever.
Wet, Wet, Wet's Marty Pelo knows the power a film can have to transform a song's potential.
The intro is very, very powerful.
I feel it in my fingers. I feel it in my toes.
It was recorded in a day, mixed in a day, and it was one of those songs that just become one of those massive phenomena. And I guess that's the beauty of great pop music.
It's written on the wind. It's everywhere I go. Oh, yes, it is. So if you really love me, come on and let it show.
Love Is All Around is a special song, ultimately for me, even for many reasons, but I think it's Reg Presley's wonderful writing. You know, I think that when he wrote that song, he touched into something that was very simple, but loads of people could relate to, you know. And I remember when I first played him the song, or our interpretation of the song, that he said, oh, I love what you've done with our song. Which was a bit of a compliment, because, you know, a few people have tried it. I love R.E.M.'s version of it, you know, and I love what we did with it. And it's a song that in hindsight, when I look back, that, you know, I still have a great passion for.
Come on.
From the top of the pop charts to the front of the stage, Marty Pello has successfully transitioned into musical theatre, recently starring in Evita in London's West End.
Oh, what a circus, oh, what a show. Argentina has gone to town over the death of an actress called Eva Perón.
The key to Evita's longevity, I think, is how accessible the music is. And the thing that fascinates me about the Evita score was I first became familiar with it through the pulp world because it had crossed over with Oh What a Circus with David Essex and Don't Cry for Me, Argentina. These songs were living in the charts before I was switched on to making the connection that was actually from a musical. So it's a very special piece. And besides that, the wonderful wordsmith of Tim Rice is, you know, it's just phenomenal. I'm such a big fan of his words, you know, and he's a great, he's very boxing clever with the pen.
Don't cry for me, Argentina. The truth is, I kept my promise, don't keep your distance.
Sir Tim Rice.
Well, Don't Cry for Me, Argentina, we really genuinely did not think that was a hit single.
And as for fortune and as for fame, I never invited them in. Though it seemed to the world they were all.
We were very pleased with it when we recorded it with Julie Covington in the first instance.
Illusions, they're not the solution.
But we never thought it was going to be something that the radio would play, and it was too long, and Julie wasn't a big name on record in those days.
I love you and hope you love me.
This was a lyric which was definitely not aimed at a single record.
Don't cry for me, Argentina.
I thought, well, the song's called Don't Cry for Me, Argentina, which is a bit daft for a pop single. But it turned out that all the elements, including a wonderful arrangement by Andrew of a great tune, they all somehow combined. And when it was played on the radio back then, in 1977, early 77, it just stood out from the other records on the chart.
Don't cry for me. I kept my promise, don't keep your distance.
But it was not like anything else, and that helps. But as I say, we did not predict it to be a hit. We thought Another Suitcase in Another Hall would be a bigger hit.
So what happens now?
Another Suitcase in Another Hall. Take your picture off another wall. You'll get by, you always have a fall.
And another hit from the reissue of the original cast recording of Evita. You're listening to the magic of the soundtrack songs. Still to come,
I got chills.
Sophie Ellis-Bextor on her love of Grease.
You're the One That I Want and Summer Nights are actually in the top 20 biggest selling singles of all time or something crazy like that.
Rebecca Ferguson on the phenomenon of Frozen.
Even adults had it on their iTunes, so as well as the kids singing it, the adults were singing it. It's just a proper lovely song.
And more from Sir Tim Rice.
And I think a lot of other people in the business thought, well, they're great songs, but there's no storyline.